Hello and welcome to Undivided. Welcome to this special series celebrating the truth tellers in our communities. I'm Brandi Cruz. Last week, the first installment in our series, we talked with Kent Mayor Dana Ralph, who I said is one of my favorite mayors because of the nonpartisan way she approaches her job. Another one of my favorite mayors is joining us today to talk about being a truth teller. It is Federal Way Mayor Jim Farrell. You might recall that Mayor Farrell ran for King County prosecutor. I was shocked when he lost. He's a Democrat, used to be a Republican, ended up changing parties. But he really, just like Mayor Ralph, has approached his job in such a nonpartisan way, and in particular, as of late, has been an important truth teller on the issue of public safety. Mayor Farrell, welcome to Undivided.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I wanted to have you here because I feel like you just really don't care at all about political ramifications. Is that fair? Is that just my, that's my outsider perspective on you, is just like, you're just sort of like, meh, come what may.
Well, you know, I actually worked for the legendary Norm Mailing, and Norm used to always say, if you know, good politics is doing your job right and standing up for the things you believe in. So I don't even, you know, there is no political calculation. There are certain things that make sense and certain things that don't. And it's up to us that are entrusted with political positions and in the highest rank, which is citizen, which is to say no. And sometimes I think the most important thing that we can do in life, if we don't like a direction something is going, is to say no. And some of us, most of us are just too polite to say so. I don't suffer from that, from that affliction. And I think it's important to just say what you mean and stand up for the people that we work for.
You know, it's so true but I don't know if it's politeness. Yeah. Sometimes I worry either it's like cowardice or it is a political calculation that they're making that this isn't going to be politically palatable for my base.
Yeah, and I think maybe there's far too much of that. I think that really what I think the people whether it's citizens and our neighbors or the elected officials, they just need to stand up for what they believe is true. I think that so much of this calculation is the base and the party, and it's like we just need to check that at the door and say, what's right in front of us? What is the decision that is in front of us? What's right? What's wrong? Where do I find my beliefs? And you know, this car pursuit issue is just really, you know, hits on all four corners of that issue of what are we talking about here? And stand up for, you know, what we believe is the right thing to do. I think actually one of the great benefits that I have is that I regularly go door to door. In the middle of COVID, I went to 7,000 doors and I hung my door pieces, you know, because you couldn't really ring the doorbell, but still you find people out in the street, people working in their yard or their garage. And there is no substitute for having that door-to-door-to-door interaction where you have that sort of honest dialogue. And when I have those dialogues, people say, safety.
Yeah, well, it's keeping a foot firmly planted in reality.
Yeah.
And whenever I see someone predominantly running a political campaign on social media,
yeah,
I'm like, that's going to fail.
Right, right.
That's not reality.
That's
and you
right.
don't even know if those are your constituents.
That's right.
Speaking of, you know, you had a campaign for King County prosecutor.
Yeah.
You didn't win.
Yeah.
I was shocked by how big the gap actually was.
Me too.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yeah.
For you, you know, you were kind of, I think mostly PAC spending, painted you really as a kind of right wing, out of touch.
Yeah.
Did you think that was odd?
I did. I actually, if you think about the number of mayors that endorsements that I had, I kept up with her dollar for dollar. In fact, actually, I led her almost every day of the campaign and fundraising. And I thought I had a very centrist, you know, approach. And I had, you know, labor support, you know, some Democrat support, business support, a really broad range of support. I think that the effort was to try to paint me with a red brush, and especially in King County and try to accomplish that. And I didn't shy away from earning the endorsements of the law enforcement agencies. And so I think that was, which I thought was very important and critical to address this. So yeah, I was surprised with the gap, especially in light of the endorsement by the Seattle Times. And I thought we ran a very centrist, reasoned campaign.
Well, that's the problem is that you did. And this was, and I said it on my podcast, it was the single biggest disappointment. I mean, I know that your disappointment was greater than mine, but it was my single biggest disappointment for November because I, like you, really believe if we don't tackle the public safety crisis, then we just can't move forward as a state. For, you know, Lisa Mannion, who's now in that role, do you have hope that she has done the right thing, said the right things thus far? Or?
You know, I do have hope always. And, you know, she's been in the office for a long time. I know she's done a little bit of restructuring. And you know, it's critically important we give her an opportunity to, you know, to do the things in the office that we hope she does. I have heard, you know, good things so far. And I do think that actually if my campaign accomplished anything, it was interesting that the way we started the campaign and, you know, the things that were on my website and what I was saying is I did sort of see her really sort of come in my direction in regard to holding offenders accountable. And that's really what the campaign was about, is that I was astounded that we had certain programs that were really just letting people go without criminal charges, without ever showing up to court. Just really astounding.
Can we talk about that? Because when we talk about kind of common sense, right?
Yeah.
And how we balance the need to make sure that people can rebuild their lives, right?
With
accountability
right.
for their actions.
Yeah.
One of the points that really differentiated the two of you is how we deal with juvenile offenders.
Right.
What for you is the balance between, okay, we've got a kid who did something. I made mistakes as a kid, right?
Right.
I didn't rob anyone or steal any vehicles. So maybe there's a little difference there. But where should that balance be between helping out a kid who maybe got into some trouble and real accountability for someone who's young but did something serious?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's you know, I've got a 15-year-old and my wife and I and
good luck.
He's thank you. And he's growing up way too fast. He's our one and only. And we're still helicopter parents. But I could tell you that one of the things you want to do is you want young people to learn from their mistakes. You don't want them to repeat them. You don't want to crush their spirit. They are at a really pivotal time, obviously, in their lives. And so you want to be able to course correct. But I think you hit the nail on the head in that what was disturbing is there is nothing wrong. And in fact, actually, you've got to have diversion programs. We've all made mistakes. I made a ton of mistakes as a young person. And what we need to do, though, is recognize that if someone commits a felony, whether it's a burglary, a robbery, you know, a firearm offense, that those cases have to have a case number. You need to make sure that you find out what happens with those and you follow up. But the goal ought to be diversion and an ultimate dismissal. That should be the goal. So you don't see those people again, those young people.
Yeah, and in South King County, I mean, you guys are seeing a lot of serious crimes perpetrated by juveniles.
That's right. Yeah, and it's incomprehensible that you wouldn't give them a case number. But you know, there have been several serious crimes that have occurred since, since January 1st, and it sounds like the King County Prosecutor's Office and their spokesperson and the leadership are taking steps to address that. We'll see. Time will tell. Mm. We're about 2 months in.
Have you thought of running for something else?
You know, I love being mayor. It is a great job. I have been mayor now for 9 years. I'm in my third term. And, you know, I think, it took a lot of negotiation with my wife to get me to be able to run for prosecutor. I think, I'm a big believer in what John Lennon said in his the lyric of Beautiful Boy is, life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans.
Yeah.
And you just never know. So I'm doing a job right now. I've got 3 years left in my term, and we'll just see what happens.
I will say, for the record, though, one of the first things I did after that race, because it was like my key focus in November, was I did kind of overlay the results with the 8th Congressional District.
Right.
And I don't know if you've been recruited to run for the 8th Congressional District, but as a Democrat, and let's just theorize it real quick. As a Democrat, would you run against a sitting Democrat for anything?
That's a good question. It would just really depend on certain, you know, we're talking about public safety issues, whether it's pursuits, drugs, those kinds of things. I think we really need to get away from party. It's about how are people performing? So that should be the answer to the question is,
right.
if I felt that the individual that was serving in a particular office was not serving the people well, and that was being driven by other agendas other than that, then I would certainly take a look at it. But I do think that I was a Republican for years and years before I moved over to the Democratic Party. And I do think that the Republican Party really needs to speak to the center, needs to really find that center ground, find out the main. Margaret Hoover wrote a great book called American Exceptionalism, the grandfather of, we were talking about books before we got started. Yeah. And I was actually going to recommend that before we got on the air, because she really talked about the different sections of the Republican Party and what makes that up. It's a very interesting read. And I think that ultimately the Republican Party really needs to, you know, just taking a look at what they're doing, they really need to get back to as a party about, you know, why are they a part of that? Mm-hmm. And not just about a particular person or a candidate or a race, but a core set of values. And I say that because the health of the political system really depends on two good, healthy political parties where we can meet in the center somewhere. And where I think you see dysfunction is where when one party really starts to crater, and then the people, you know, that are more on the other, more on the extremes of the other party, mm-hmm. take that other, the remaining party in the wrong direction. And I think, and really what you're missing is that center where people really care about education, you know, public safety, you know, those kinds of issues.
And that's, yeah, it's exactly what's happening in our state. I think the one party rule, regardless of what party it is disastrous. You have no right. backstop for bad ideas. Right. And they just, as we have seen, they just go full steam ahead with stuff unchecked. I want to talk about your politics for a moment, because it was 2012, right, where you shifted from the Republican Party to the Democratic Party. What drove that decision for you?
Well, I was very concerned. I remember watching the 2008 Republican National Convention in Minneapolis and just became very concerned. I thought that the direction of the Republican Party, especially, you know, everybody loves John McCain, right? War hero, great guy. I think the selection of Sarah Palin was the wrong direction. And I think it foretold really sort of a swing to a particular direction. And so I became concerned with regard to energy policy, conservation issues, the environmental issues. It's really the environment and the energy policy are essentially two sides of the same coin, obviously. And then you've got labor issues, and you know, just certain issues where I really felt like I could be a blue. I was looking intellectually for a space for myself, whether, and I thought, you know, sort of as a blue dog Democrat, pro law enforcement, you know, strong on national defense, but also, you know, like I thought drill, baby, drill, which is the mantra in the 08 convention, was just wrongheaded. And we need to be thinking about where we're going to be 100 years from now, 150 years from now. And America is going to lead the way on all these kinds of technologies like we always have. So I really think that we don't want to be the country or the country with one party that has an anti-intellectual sort of stint. We really want to move forward, but it really is about finding out where the bulk of the country is. And at the time, I really felt myself, I found an intellectual space there, just left of center. There is actually a division within the labor movement between, you know, hard hats and, you know, the more, there's a phrase for it, where you've got more of the building trades versus more of the progressive element. And that's sort of the split, I think, that's occurring in the Democratic Party right now, which is that, you know, where do we find ourselves?
But, you know, it's a big jump to abscond to a different political party entirely. And
abscond, I love that word.
Was any part of it just a calculation that, hey, this is Washington, we're getting bluer and bluer, and I can't win as a Republican?
Well, no. No, my wife, Wendy, I was driving her crazy for years because I ultimately, you know, what's fun is I always used to, you know, I went to University of Washington, we both did, and the color is purple, and, you know, for the Huskies. And I tend to, you know, purple actually is a good color for me. I really find myself really, and as we all are, a mix of our backgrounds. No, I think actually what's happening in America right now is a divide. That is so unnecessary. And really, the founders were very concerned about it. Washington was concerned about the rise of political parties. I think it's important as a rallying cry for and a rallying point for certain ideological issues. But when the party becomes more important than the entity, whether it's the city, state, country, I think that's where it becomes somewhat counterproductive. So I thought at the time that that being, you know, left of center and being a working class Democrat, but, you know, also pro law enforcement, that is an intellectual, you know, space that I could occupy. And I put a great deal of thought into it. And the reason I mentioned Wendy was because, you know, there for years I had, you know, I kept asking the question, am I in the right party? Am I in the right party? Because I had, you know, certain core beliefs, whether it was, you know, labor or you know, environment. And I do think that it's the leaders that can show that great crossover. You know, Ronald Reagan had great crossover. Yeah, remember, it was the labor, the Teamsters endorsed Ronald Reagan. The air traffic controllers, the ones that he eventually had to fire during the campaign, they endorsed his campaign. And so he had that real mix. And that's really what I like to say. And I've been in politics now over almost 30 years. And I did an internship in D.C. I did, you know, I was, you know, a couple of national conventions. And I was there when the balloons dropped for Dole. I was there when the balloons dropped for 43. And then I now have a decade on the other side. I could tell you that politics is about addition, not subtraction.
Yeah.
And it's about bringing people together. And when you really have the ability to speak to really to capture the imagination of both sides, that's really what leadership is about.
But fast forward 10 years since you made that decision, do you feel like the party you chose is about addition and not subtraction?
I think we've got some real challenges. I was very surprised at the reaction I received during my campaign. I had been a precinct committee officer for 10 years. I was astonished at the reaction I got in certain quarters. And so,
painting you as like not one of us.
Right, right.
Right.
Astonished. And so I'm trying not to take it personally. You know, I think, you know, I ran a hard campaign. And what I loved about that campaign was it was nonpartisan. That's what's great about being mayor. Nonpartisan, love it.
But nothing's truly nonpartisan.
You know, I actually think most, you know, being a leader now, I've been 9 years as mayor. There is no such thing as a partisan speed bump or a partisan police officer or a partisan, you know, response. When you call 911 and you know, the officer's on the way for an armed robbery, I don't care if it's a Democrat or Republican that's responding. I want a police officer there.
Yeah.
And to show up to my house to help me with, you know. And so I think that's really where I'm kind of occupying that purple space.
Well, and don't get me wrong, I do think that the best mayors, and, you know, you're one of my favorites. The Kent mayor, Dana Ralph, is one of my favorites.
Her.
Love John Nearing.
Yeah.
And it's because you guys do operate in a true nonpartisan way.
Yeah.
But what I meant by nothing's truly nonpartisan is campaigns.
Right.
I mean, nothing, you know, you had, for instance, Seattle City Attorney race with Ann Davison,
right,
who had been a Republican for like 1 minute.
Right.
But that became the central theme of the campaign against her.
Yeah.
So I think I've asked you this before. Why even choose a party?
Right.
Because I feel like you're very I tend to think most people just choose one out of convenience.
Right.
Why even identify with one?
Yeah, I think it has to do with, that's a great question.
Thanks. I'm making you, you know, rethink your whole life today.
Exactly. Well, you know, I would say that, you know, there are certain issues and certain, you know, folks, you know, what's interesting, this reminds me of this. You asked me about why did I switch over? It was really, I led the effort to create the elected mayor system in Federal Way. Mm. And I had been a Republican for years, and it was so fascinating that some of the you know, a lot of my longtime supporters had stood out and held signs for me. They were all sort of blue dog Democrats. Mm-hmm. They were working class Democrats. And all of my friends just sort of naturally were part of this group that were very sort of just left of center, as we've discussed. And it was interesting that when I went to change the form of government 14 years ago now in Federal Way, you would have thought I was trying to outlaw cats and dogs.
Yeah.
And the Republican establishment, and it was interesting, the closer I got to the water when I was doorbelling for it, the more resistance I got. And it was like the more I think there was something about the elected mayor thing and campaign, which sort of naturally a lot of my coalitions and support sort of naturally came together. It was interesting. Just something. And I'm trying to
you really went down the rabbit hole to avoid my question. But and here's why I asked that. I just don't think that either party has earned you.
Yeah.
And I think that for a lot of people, you know, you left the Republican Party for a reason.
Right.
And the reasons that you articulated have not improved in the Republican Party. As
right.
you said, you know, I share the same hopes that the party can get back to maybe the core, what they're supposed to or claim to be about.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, Democrats, you look at some of the laws that they've passed in Washington state that you've been down there
right.
trying like hell to push back against. And, you know, the shunning that you got on the campaign trail from the party that you say
right.
that you're a part of. So I guess
right.
I just don't, I wish more people would just say that until one of you deserves me, I'm not going to be a part of your system.
Yeah. Well, I think that there's great merit to being a nonpartisan, you know, and I consider myself a nonpartisan office holder now.
Yeah.
So I think it's a matter, it's not a matter of, you know, I mean, I seek support, from, you know, from both sides. So I really actually, and that was what was good about, I didn't really run as a partisan, Democrat mm-hmm. for prosecutor. It was nonpartisan, but I think my opponents, consultants and their campaign, really, that was the focus, to brand me with the, you know, with a red label. And most people, when they want to try to put you in a box, they want to brand you and
right.
push you over. And I think on the national stage, we've had some, you know, some things that have occurred nationally that I think, you know, just don't, you know, don't work really here well here in the King County area.
Yeah. And I understand the big tent concept.
Yeah.
But I think a tent can be too big. I think when you are a Republican Party and you have everyone from Marjorie Taylor Greene to Liz Cheney, it's like, well, what are you?
Right.
What am I getting into? And then when you have a Democrat Party and you can have everyone from Joe Manchin to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez,
right.
it's like, what am I getting into?
Right.
Why don't, you know, 10 years ago you switched parties. Why don't today you just, let's just make you an independent? No, you're
yeah.
not ready.
Why
don't you announce today that you're leaving the Democratic Party? No,
I think it's just safe to say I'm a nonpartisan office
okay,
holder.
All right.
Yeah.
You know, when you want to come to the land of independence,
exactly.
give me a call because it's
That's
really
right.
nice here. Although everyone
yeah.
hates you.
Exactly.
No one likes when they can't figure out where your loyalties are.
Right.
But
right.
that's okay.
Well, I actually have been very interested. You know, you've got some great history books here. I'm a big student of history, took a lot of history classes at the University of Washington. I've thought for years that what would be fascinating is a fusion ticket at the national level. Like,
yeah.
wouldn't it have been fun? You know, we were talking about the 2008 presidential race. McCain really wanted to pick Lieberman.
He did.
Imagine if he had done that. And I think actually before that, in 2004, John Kerry really wanted to have McCain. Mm. And I think that, and before that, actually you had, Tim Worth, the senator from Colorado at the time. He ended up in the Clinton administration. And Senator Worth wanted Senator Hines to run with him. And from Pennsylvania. So I think that there's been a great talk about fusion in this country and about trying to really bridge these gaps. And that's really what I love that thought.
Yeah. Can you imagine what a different place we'd be in if
yeah.
McCain had
I know.
Picked a Democrat and won, perhaps?
Right.
It'd be interesting.
Yeah.
I do want to talk to you about some of the appearances you've made down in Olympia.
You bet.
As I mentioned, I had Mayor Ralph on the show. And we talked about this frustration of South King County mayors feeling like,
right.
you're just down there flailing in Seattle's shadow. What has it been like this legislative session trying to advocate for the public safety priorities that you think that they need to be focusing on?
Well, we're having a good discussion. I've been down there first on 1363, which is the pursuit bill. And there, I think there were several versions of pursuit of the fix. I could tell you that in Federal Way, it's astonishing what has occurred. Just absolutely outrageous. And, you know, and we have linked, you know, statistically and numerically, once the law was passed, car theft in the city of Federal Way has gone up just in the past year, 58%.
Wow.
We've had 550 instances of people running from the police since the law went into effect. And we had one like just a week ago Friday, where we had pinned a guy into one of the stolen car into one of the motels on Pacific Highway. What does the individual do? He's in the car. He's like, well, I'm behind the wheel. I don't have to stop. He rammed into the car, spun his wheels to the point where smoke was coming out, pushed the police car out of the way, and then took off.
Wow.
And under the law that we have right now, we can literally not pursue him.
Wow.
And it's just out in a stolen car. So I think actually what you really need to do is, I think that there's all kinds of agendas. I went down there and I looked at the members of the committee, because first I went through There was the Public Safety Committee, and then it went to Transportation. And when I was in before the Transportation Committee on 1363, I said, everybody, every one of you and everybody behind me got here by way of a car today. What would you do if you had gone out to your, you know, out to your car and it was stolen? Now I want you to imagine that a couple hours later, a police officer is behind your car. I think it really is it really undermines common sense that you wouldn't want the police to be able to pursue your stolen car. And most of it, you know, I said most of the people that are on the dais and in the audience would be able to absorb that loss. The people that are not are the people that are really, you know, working class people that do not have the ability to absorb that major loss. Car theft, since this law went into effect, has gone up 88% statewide. It's outrageous. And they are really sacrificing the public safety of 90% of the population to pursue, you know, to protect these offenders and a social agenda which is disconnected from common sense.
When you hear someone like Senator Monica Dingra, chair of Law and Justice, who really was someone who I think directly led to that bill being watered down, when you hear her say, well, I have not seen data to suggest that the crime crisis is a result of that law.
I just gave the data. We have the data.
Yeah.
There are, I think, actually, you know, several thousand more, it's several thousand people. I think it's 2,000 individuals that have fled from the State Patrol. They have the numbers.
Oh, it's more than that. It's 3,000. Yeah, it was 3,100 in 2022.
Thank you very much. Thank
Insane.
You. Right. So I think I was wondering if that was the Delta. But yeah, that I had, so that number is an insane number. We already have the numbers. So I guess I don't think that's intellectually honest.
No.
I really, and that's what I'm talking about is that I think that there, I was in the, in some of these committee meetings where they're discussing the numbers. And I think it's a shell game. I think it's actually not intellectually honest. It's absolutely outrageous that the police cannot pursue for, you know, most felonies. And this whole thing about they're going to add, well, we're going to add sex offenses and we're going to add assault. I was a prosecutor for 19 years. Mm-hmm. I'll give you one guess. How many of those did we arrest the suspect in a speeding car in sex offenses? 19 years? Not one. Not one. Right. That's not how sex is. So to add that to the list of offenses that you could pursue people for is, again, not intellectually honest, and it's window dressing. And it's really, that's the kind of thing where you just kind of just shrug your shoulders and say, what are you doing?
Yeah. It's performative politics to say, oh, no, we fixed the law.
Right.
So as it is and how it was watered down in the House is, you know, it has these six categories. You mentioned one of them that you can pursue for if you've got reasonable suspicion. But chief among them that it leaves out is the stolen vehicle issue.
Right.
And so do you have any hope that that is somehow going to be added or resuscitated?
Well, I was recently told that if we try to hang, we've got lobbyists down there, and I've been told by our people in the know that if we try to hang the amendment on the bill on the floor, that'll likely kill the bill. Mm-hmm. So I spent the last week thinking about this, and I worked in Olympia when I was, when I did an internship with Senator Von Reichbauer at the time, now a King County Council member, and he always says, stop telling people that. It was 33 years ago. And, you know, he's been involved for 50 years now. Yeah. Now. He'll be really mad if he hears this. He was appointed to the state Senate in 73, and he's a great friend and mentor, a good Republican. And when I was down there in 89, in the sessions that I worked since then and my time in politics since then, over the course of 30 years, you know, Olympia is a place in which people engage in incrementalism. And that you don't always get, you know, as a Stone say, you don't always get what you want, but you get what you need. And I think we're starting to move in that direction. So that's the long way of saying something on 1363, something's better than nothing. Well, let's just start with something. I think the perfect would be to add either all felonies that they could pursue for, because these are law enforcement officials, or at a minimum, stolen vehicles. Maybe next session.
Yeah, well, they're going to do their 19-person study, and they're going to study the issue until 2024 or something like that.
They could study it for 100 years. What does that mean? That doesn't make any sense. It is not tethered to common sense.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that are tethered to common sense.
I don't understand that. And my attitude is, what are you trying to accomplish?
Right.
It's agenda-driven, and I believe that there's some partisan politics, and it's like, you just let people vote. And and frankly, actually, I would almost be, you know, I was just thinking the other day, maybe this is something that we need to do a statewide initiative on.
Yeah.
Because I think that this is an outrageous departure from societal norms and really what we expect. You know, the core function of government is to protect the public.
Yeah.
That is why we have government. It's at its very core element. And this doesn't pass that test. And any kind of argument, I mean, I don't ever remember in all of the pursuit cases that I had, because I used to file cases. I tried hundreds of cases. I filed felony elude cases, stolen car cases. My last assignment at the King County Prosecutor's Office, after a couple of years in HVAC, which is homicide violent crime, there was MDOP and then there was HVAC. We cleaned up the rest. And but the last assignment I was in the office was a stolen car unit. And sometimes these guys would have cases, you know, when we still had paper files, would stack up, you know, a foot off the desk. They would steal one to one, you know, go one car to the other. And, you know, you absolutely, I think, need to, in all of those cases, I'm just going to make a point.
Yes.
In all of those cases, I never once read or saw somebody that was seriously injured or a bystander. It's a chimera. It is a smokescreen.
Incredibly rare. Has happened. Right. Yeah. Incredibly rare. And I'm not saying that any life isn't valuable, but when they're holding up this study that has now been debunked,
right?
That it's talking about 9 people in a year and a half, the majority of which were either the suspect or in the car with the suspect.
Right.
You're talking about numbers that are, I don't want to say statistically insignificant, but that I don't think you can extrapolate enough information from to make policy around. So it's pretty mind-boggling. Can I ask you, though, from a prosecutorial perspective, because the argument of, you talked about it earlier, is that, well, it's just a car.
Right.
You know, car is not worth a life. Property is not worth a life. When you would go over these cases and these individuals who are stealing cars, is that the only thing they'd ever done? Did they go on to do other things?
That's the thing, as I told you, that most of these cases, and when I, you know, like I said, my last stint at the prosecutor's office, 2012 or 2013, you know, they'd have car to car, and a lot of these guys would have multiple. We'd have to work with Pierce County and Snohomish County because they had the same number or many other stolen cars in other jurisdictions. But even, you know, a lot of these individuals now have gotten to the point where they are stealing a car to commit another offense.
Right.
And they're in that stolen vehicle when they commit the robbery.
Right.
And in Federal Way, we had people, these two guys come in. They walked right into a nail salon, fired off a couple of rounds into the ceiling, scared the hell out of everybody in the store, and then got in their stolen car, got away. Well, at this point, then they ditched the car somewhere else. They're absolutely impossible to track those folks down.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I'd ask people like Senator Dinkins. What do you think they're stealing cars for?
Right,
they're not
exactly
stealing the car to get to work.
Right.
You know, it's a felony
right
to steal the car. It's a felony to elude. It's
right
a Class C felony.
Right.
Is it still?
It is technically
a Class C felony.
Right.
And so you're stealing it and you're running because you're scared that what you're going to get caught for is worse.
Right.
You know, and so it boggles my mind that they're either deliberately or really don't understand.
Yeah. Well, just think about that. You know, again, people who are in the least ability to recover from a stolen vehicle. Because when your car is stolen, it's damaged, it's been destroyed, it's been either in an accident or its dash got ripped out, its windows got broken, you know, and it's just really, you know, and now you've got people that really don't have the ability to replace that car or to repair that car. They've got to go to work. They got to take their kids to school. Your car is this, at least in this area, is the central way that you get around. So I just think it's just outrageous. And I don't understand it. I'm 56 years old. I literally have, you know, it's like when I hear somebody say it's just a property crime, I'm like, shame on you. I mean, where is your common sense and where is your sense of right and wrong? And that's where I'm at.
Yeah. And I think there's just this feeling, at least I feel, and I don't think it's an exaggeration, that they're prioritizing criminals over people who are just going about their lives, working hard, trying to make a living and survive. And it's like, where are your priorities at? I want to ask you quickly about Blake.
Yeah.
For folks who aren't familiar, we've talked about on the show, the state Supreme Court ruling that nullified our felony drug possession statute. They have to do something before July or you know, all these drugs are now officially kind of okay to carry around, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they are right now, according to the current law. But go ahead.
Well, no. I mean, an officer can offer 3 times for someone to get help. And then the 4th time, presumably, you could do something about it. So on Friday night, there was some, I don't know if you've heard the interesting happenings, but there you know, getting ready to vote on what I think is one of the weaker solutions to Blake. But the Democrats disappear in their caucus room for like more than 2 hours. And there was a majority of them in the Senate who thought it went too far, even this very weak sort of effort at, you know, making drug possession a crime again.
Right.
And they come out and they vote, and a majority of the Democratic caucus voted against this bill.
Right.
The bill as it passed, do you think it can help some of the situations that you're dealing with?
Greatly. I mean, you know, first of all, let's just start with the whole thing. I mean, they want to make this really complicated, that somehow or another the Supreme Court from on high struck down and we've got to figure out what to do. All they had to do was add one word.
Yeah.
One word.
Knowingly.
Right. That was it. And in fact, actually, in the absence of when they refuse to fix it 2 years ago, that's what we did in the city of Federal Way. We created our own ordinance at a gross misdemeanor level, added the word, and it was legal. So that they could have done that very easily and prevented all of this.
That's not what it was about. They saw it as an opportunity to say, oh, let's decriminalize some of this stuff.
And they essentially, there's been a state of de facto legalization because, as you said, you had to have those two prior warnings, which means there is no database. There is no way to check. You've really created another element of the offense. As a former prosecutor, what you'd have to prove is that have you been, did you get your two prior warnings? Well, let me tell you as a prosecutor, do you have fingerprints of that person? Did you take pictures of that person? So really what they did is there was a state of de facto legalization for possession. Well, again, intellectually dishonest and not helpful to cities trying to run a city where, you know, you've got people on the sidewalk, on a park bench, shooting up. And what are you doing? I mean, you know, where kids are driving by and families, it's a breakdown of the societal order. It's not right. So the was it 5536?
I think that sounds right.
Yeah. The Senate bill.
Live on air. Yeah.
I went down and testified in favor of it. I actually think it's the right fit. I think a gross misdemeanor, which is punishable by up to essentially a year in jail and a $5,000 fine, that's the maximum, right? Yeah. But what you want to do is give local courts the ability to be able to enforce street-level narcotic activity, possession. And so I'm glad they got it through. It's a good thing that I'm glad that even though a majority of their caucus didn't support it, you have to do give the Democrats credit for letting it get on the floor.
Right, and that is, I mean, that hasn't happened. So the pursuit bill, just really quickly, the
1363
hadn't, they were counting votes behind the scenes. Had in the Senate Monica Dingra allowed that, you know, to go up and it went to the floor, or had they pulled it to the floor, there were enough votes to pass it without it being watered down, but they refused to do it, which I think is very anti-democratic of them.
I agree.
But I agree that they disappeared into this caucus room. They had to have known that the majority of their caucus didn't support it, but they did allow a vote to be taken.
And that's great.
Which is good.
Yeah, it is good. And it should reflect. I mean, the law.
We shouldn't have to celebrate that. I should just know.
Well, I think it's a good positive step. Again, it's incrementalism. It's fairness in allowing that to get on. I think a gross misdemeanor solution, you know, and what that means for everybody listening is that means it would be handled not at Superior Court, but either in district or municipal court. Every city has their own, every city handles their misdemeanors. And then the county handles the felonies. And then you also, for misdemeanors that occur in King County areas, you've got district courts in the various district courts around King County. I think this is the perfect way to handle this. Because low-level possessory offenses, you know, a lot of these folks are really, you know, they're in the throes of addiction or they've got other issues, but they're also committing other crimes to feed that addiction.
Yeah.
So you're really not doing anybody any favors by looking the other way. And a misdemeanor or a municipal court or a district court is the perfect avenue to address that. I spent 3 years as a city of Renton prosecutor at the municipal court level, and it's a treatment court. It's getting people back on the right track. It's, you know, sometimes people needed to do a little jail, but for the most part, it's about getting people back on track.
One complaint I've heard bandied about is that you're kind of throwing this on municipalities who might not have resources. Are you guys fine? You're going to deal with it?
Yeah, you know what? I hear that. In fact, our lobbyist says, well, we need to get the money. I'm like, forget the money. I mean,
you want me to scratch that from the record, Jim?
Exactly. Let me just take, as a mayor, you know, there are certain things. It's like, how much does this cost? It's like, how much does it cost not to do it?
Sure.
And I'm like, don't let that be the reason this fails. And yeah. and so I'm sure if Jim Hedrick is listening to this, yes. guy, we got Jim Hedrick and Luke S. are helping us with our legislative affairs. They're great. Luke is a former state senator and I'd been involved in partisan politics. They're great.
Yeah.
So what I can tell you is that that's nice. We need that. It's nice. But at the bottom line, we just need the law in place to address it. The money we'll figure out later.
Yeah. Jim will take the money.
Exactly.
You offer it. He just doesn't want you to kill the bill over it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And I think this is one of those points of common sense agreement. I mean, there was just a bill, a bipartisan bill I liked a little bit more than this one, the June Robinson bill, but because I like the Jesse Solomon bill. But
right.
I think this is a point we can all agree on is we don't need drug addicts sitting in jail.
Right.
I don't think anybody wants that. And that's
right.
this false dichotomy that's been set up. It's like you have one side that wants them to rot in prison.
Right.
And then the other side that wants them to just keep using out on the
right.
streets.
Right.
It's like what I do like about this bill is that at every stage it pushes them to get treatment.
Right.
And they can get their record expunged
right.
if they successfully finish treatment. I think that's great. I think we don't want people to be haunted by their past if
right.
they can get better and become productive members of society, but it gives law enforcement a tool. So,
and I like Senator Solomon. Actually, I've met him a few times.
Yeah.
A public defender, great guy. And his bill was good. I think it ended with 47. I think that was his, it was 55-47, I think. And it had some interesting components to it. Mm-hmm. What I like about the vehicle that's moving now that came out of the Senate is it does, if you know treatment is completed, then it results in a dismissal. So it really isn't, it's not about incarcerating people
no.
or warehousing people. It's about making sure that you've got the mechanisms in place to get them help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a similar thing with the pursuit law. The criminals need to know that they could get pursued.
Right, right.
They need to believe that that's a possibility.
Right.
And I think with, you know, the people who are in the throes of substance abuse, there needs to be a possibility
right.
that they could be detoxed and in a jail cell. And that's the motivation for them to be like, well, I'd rather go to a facility where I can.
Don't you love those 911 calls from suspects?
Yeah.
Going out.
Oh, they can't pursue me. Back off, bro. It's like, for Senator Dingra, do you need anything other than those 911
right.
calls to
right.
prove that your law is a failure?
Right. Exactly.
Oh, it's
yeah.
good.
What are we trying? What are we solving for?
Yeah.
You know, that's where, you know, you really just have to ask, you know, what are we working toward? What's the goal? And the goal is obvious. We always want to make sure that we've got justice, that we want to treat people fairly, that we don't want to put law enforcement in situations that are overly dangerous.
Yeah.
We, you know, those are obvious things. And that's about training. Every law enforcement agency already has, you know, pursuit termination policies. They just don't allow dangerous pursuits. So this is all really just sort of a chimera.
Yeah.
Which is one of my favorite words these days.
That's a new one.
Exactly.
But I got it in context.
Yes,
I mean,
that's right.
Now I know it. Yeah. And it's so true. I mean, the difference was that the criminals didn't know it was a widespread thing.
Right.
You know,
right.
they still believed like, oh, if I run away, they're going to come after
yeah,
me.
Yeah, they know.
You know?
They know.
Yeah. Well, Federal Way Mayor Jim Farrell, this has been fun.
Yeah, thank
you. I told you that this is a series really highlighting people and celebrating people who are saying what needs to be said regardless of what comes after that.
Right.
I guess what would your advice be to your fellow public servants, to other folks who might be kind of in the middle and feel a little scared to speak out because the fringes are terrifying and might say something about them? What advice would you give them about why they should or how they can?
I would always say, first of all, I say to all of those fellow public servants, thank you for your service.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I think it's important to always be truthful, intellectually honest, and to do the difficult things. I mean, I think that's, that's what we're put in office to do. I mean, we've all heard that John Kennedy, you know, is really one of my heroes. And it's like, you know, you hear that great Rice University speech,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, we do these things, you know, talking about the moon thing. We don't do them because they're hard, because they're easy. We do them because they are hard. And I think that, and in fact, anybody who ever, you know, seeks to be in public service should read Profiles in Courage. And that's,
yeah.
I think actually taking a page from that book or a few pages is do the thing that you know is right. And you know, let the consequences be damned. It's really, they take care of themselves. And I think it's really important to do those right things. It's not, your allegiance is to the people you serve, not necessarily to a political party or a cause, but to do right.
Yeah. Mayor Farrell, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
thank you to Federal Way Mayor Jim Ferrell for coming in and talking about the importance of being a truth teller. And, you know, I chatted with him, and our interview was before they passed this sort of watered down bill to deal with the police pursuit law. But I know he's going to be working really hard to strengthen that bill and to make sure that it's actually going to have a positive impact on communities like his. We will have our final episode in our special series on truth tellers coming up on Friday. A woman who I got to meet for the first time, who has an awesome, awesome life story and so much wisdom to impart on how we deal with this drug crisis of ours. So I hope you can join us on Friday for that. Remember, subscribers to the show get early access to these special episodes. You can sign up at patreon.com/undivided or by becoming a contributor on my Locals community, brandycruz.locals.com.